This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the GSMC Sports Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jeff Malanoff, and with me once again is Mark Souza. But before we get started, there is some news regarding the WWE. Last night on their show, Monday Night Raw, their world champion, also known as Universal Champion, Roman Reigns, also known, his real name is Joe Anoa'i, says he has been battling leukemia for the last 11 years, and it's made a comeback. And now he's taking time off from professional wrestling and the WWE to be with his family and try to beat this once again in his life. It was remissioned in 2008, and now it has returned. And I just want to say, I believe on the behalf of everyone here at Golden State Media Concepts, we wish him nothing but the best, and our prayers are with him and his family through this tough, difficult time, because it's not easy.
Yeah, our thoughts and prayers go out to Roman Reigns and his family.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to make clear that I was always a little anti-Roman Reigns growing up, or just watching wrestling, just because it was the cool thing to do, but this is beyond what happens on television. You can not be a fan of the guy, but as for the man, Joe Anoa'i himself, everything, you should be giving your hearts and your prayers, and hopefully he makes a recovery for this, because it's still a horrible, horrible disease, and hopefully he will make it through this. But with that note, we should move on to other sports news. Monday Night Football, the Falcons beating the New York Football Giants 23-20 in a very high passing game. Both teams passed for over 300 yards. The combined total passing yards alone was 728 combined yards. Matt Ryan had 379 yards total with a touchdown, and Eli Manning had 399 yards with one touchdown. So both had a very, very good game on the passing route. They both were struggling rushing wise, but overall, the Falcons did come away with the win 23-20.
Yeah, it was. There's a lot of passing, like you said, but it still wasn't that high scoring, which is kind of weird. Usually, when both quarterbacks throw for that much,
like especially when it's both are in over almost in the 400s.
Yeah, most of that scoring came in the last quarter.
Two touchdowns total for both of them. That's absurd. For that many passing yards, and you can't get in the end zone.
Yeah, and we talked about yesterday how bad the defenses were.
Yeah, but rushing-wise, they were worse than their passing.
Rushing-wise, they were worse, and Tevin Coleman had a terrible game until he had that, 30-yard run? Like, that kind of made it
Barkley
more respectable.
Barkley didn't have a good game either. He only had 94 total yards, and he had 14 rushing attempts for only 43 yards and a touchdown. So
yeah, they actually stopped Barkley pretty well, which was surprising to see.
But then you look at the receivers. Sterling Shepard and Odell Beckham Jr.
They had 300 total yards.
Yeah, Shepard had 5 receptions for 167 yards. No touchdowns, though. That's odd. But Odell Beckham Jr. had 8 receptions for 143 yards and the one touchdown throw by Eli Manning. And then you look at Julio Jones, who led his team in receiving. He had over 100 yards on 9 receptions. And again, no touchdowns.
Again?
His streak is alive, people.
Yeah, Marvin Hall scored a touchdown as a receiver yesterday, but still no Julio touchdowns.
Are you frustrated if you're Julio Jones, or do you not? Or just as long as your team's winning, it's fine.
You want to win, but up until yesterday, I mean, even with yesterday's win, the Falcons are under 500. So it's not like you're winning and you're not getting touchdowns. You're not winning and you're not scoring. So that's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, true. I'm just saying, for this game, would he be okay with it considering they got the win?
I mean, for him, he's got to be frustrated because when he had Shanahan running that offense, he was scoring a lot. And
They were the number one offense in the league.
They were the number one offense in the league, and he was also scoring a lot of touchdowns. So it's gone completely opposite for him in that time. His numbers, his yardage is still there. And as we can see, I mean, when you watch Julio Jones, like last night, how people get to see him on Monday Night Football, a lot of people don't get to see Julio Jones week in, week out if you don't have like the Sunday NFL package or Red Zone or something like that.
Unless you go to like a bar, Buffalo Wild Wings or something.
Yeah, you might see highlights and things like that, but what's nice about like Monday Night Football primetime games is that you get to see his ability as a route runner when they're highlighting him, even the plays where he's not getting the ball, just to see how good he runs, how hard he runs defenders off of him. It doesn't matter what route it is. One of the commentators last night made a good point. He runs every route like it's a go route. And then he changes it to depending whatever the route is on the play. But
he's good at faking out his defender, whoever it is.
What he's really good at is he gets on top of cornerbacks really quickly. Like they're in a backpedal, and then all of a sudden it's like they have to turn their feet because he'll blow by them, and then he cuts, and they're done. So
with his size and speed, even the best corners are going to have trouble with him, especially like when you're backpedaling against a guy like that who can literally burst down to a run and stop like on a dime and then cut left or right or even cut for a hook and get the ball and then gain that speed all over again in like a second.
Absolutely. I think there's also something to be said too. We talk about, I think the general consensus is like Antonio Brown's probably the best receiver in the NFL.
I think Julio is.
It's between those two probably for me, but gosh, DeAndre Hopkins is right there, too.
Oh, absolutely. I put DeAndre Hopkins in the top three.
I think DeAndre has the best hands of the three. Like, he has the best catch radius.
Oh, he can catch anything.
Yeah, he has the best catch radius.
Julio Jones might be the most physically dominated one of the three.
DeAndre Hopkins is like a black hole. Like, if the ball's around him, he just, like, it's his. Like, it doesn't matter.
Definitely, I would agree with that. But, like, Julio Jones has the size, and I think he's
faster than DeAndre. They're about the same size, probably.
Antonio Brown might be a little faster, but still, Julio, I would pick Julio over Antonio Brown. Just, like, his matchups will always be a mismatch for the corner. Antonio Brown sometimes gets, like, shut out, and
bigger guy can guard him.
Yeah, but with Julio, he always has a positive game. Yeah, he doesn't get touchdowns, but he gets 100
yards. He's a very underrated player. I feel like even us praising him right now and you saying so many good things about him is still not giving him enough credit for how good he actually is.
Yeah, because people are looking at his touchdowns. Oh, he has no touchdowns. That doesn't mean he's not contributing. He's getting, like, those 10 to 12 receptions a game for over 100 yards. He's getting the job done for his team to get in time for a touchdown.
So we saw Odell Beckham on the other side. Are both of these guys in your top five for wide receivers?
Julio is definitely. Odell is at best five for me.
It's close.
I know.
Who would you put in front of him other than the three people we just named? Brown, Julio, and DeAndre Hopkins.
Right now, I put Thielen right now, to be honest.
Yeah, Thielen's killing it. But you think overall, Thielen is a product of his offense more than like his actual talent?
Well, he's always been a consistently
positive. He's a good player.
Positive,
we're not saying he's like trash or anything. I'm just saying like start a team today and you needed a wide receiver and you could pick between Odell and Thielen.
You might want to go with Thielen, to be honest, because who's got the hot hand right now? You got that momentum.
Do you say that though with just the receiver in mind, or do you say that with the attitude and off the field stuff in mind too? Like if Odell Beckham and Adam Thielen were the same character, right? The same personality.
I would definitely put the personality, I would put that in consideration.
Because Odell had a really good game yesterday.
Well, when Odell gets frustrated and he gets angry, he plays bad. That's a problem. He gets frustrated when he
does.
Gets
he play bad, or does quarterback always play bad?
Okay, granted, touche. He does have one of the worst quarterbacks in the league at the moment. But when you see that guy frustrated on the field and he's like yelling at the quarterback, like that's not what you want. I know it depends on the quarterback, but like if I was a quarterback, I'd be like, well, why should I be listening to you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't just boss me around like that. I'm the quarterback.
So what was your takeaway from last night's game? If you're a Falcons fan, what should you feel this morning?
I would take the win with a grain of salt because you faced a poor team in the Giants that have won one, two.
Are you wins. More? Are you happy or are you just more relieved that you didn't lose and end your season last night?
Because
it wasn't a pretty game for the Falcons. They should have handled this game easier.
Yeah. You could definitely say it was a relief game type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like saying like, okay, we still have a chance to make the playoffs or playoff hopes are alive in all things considered, and we can get back into a winning record by end season.
I was very disappointed in the Falcons, to be honest with you.
I was disappointed in both teams with how well they were playing on offense, both passing-wise, and you can only get 23 and 20 total.
Well, here's the thing. The Giants, they have an okay defense. The Giants' defense is okay, but their offense, granted they have good athletes like Barkley, like Odell Beckham, like Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard, their offense is a disaster most of the time because they get sacked like every five or six plays. Like they'll have a decent drive going and then Eli takes a sack. All right,
so let me ask you this. If you're the Giants and you're the number one pick, do you go with like the number one offensive tackle right now, which is Jonah Williams out of Alabama, or do you go with the quarterback out of Oregon?
If you think Justin Herbert or another quarterback is your guy, you have to go for him.
Mm-hmm.
Have to. I mean, I love...
Honestly, if you
in a perfect world, you get your starting quarterback and your starting left tackle with your first two picks, and then you have those two guys for the next 10 years, but...
To be honest, that guy from Alabama, Jonah Williams, is a beast, though. He's the number one offensive tackle right now.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that a lot of times when you're drafting a quarterback in the top 10 picks, you're actually not drafting the best player. You're drafting because you need a quarterback. Yeah, you need a quarterback, but... It usually, if all things were equal, if the quarterback position was just as important as the other positions on the field, the other positions, most of the time, the top players there are better than that quarterback. I mean, not all the time, but you kind of get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Actually, like when the Niners drafted Alex Smith, for example.
That was a very big risk.
But even still, like in that draft, other players ended up being better than him, but they needed a quarterback, so...
Aaron Rodgers, but I'm not giving that.
Hey, 22 teams passed on Aaron Rodgers.
True, true, true. Well, so, some of them didn't need a quarterback. 20
right.
of them probably didn't need a quarterback.
Correct, but if you knew what Aaron Rodgers is going to be, everybody would have picked him number one. Every single team.
Yeah. But the funny thing with Jonah Williams is he actually, I actually was friends with him for a little bit when he was in high school. Like, we mm-hmm. had lunch together, like, every Wednesday with a bunch of our friends and stuff. So that was... It's cool to see him, like, now he's all with Alabama, and he's becoming, like, a top five pick, which I just think is cool. Like, just good for him.
That's awesome. I remember, you know, living in this area. I remember when he committed to Alabama. Yeah, he was... didn't he play on that high school team with the quarterback from Washington?
Folsom, yeah.
Yeah.
Played for Folsom.
Okay.
He started
what
at Davis
team,
High
right?
School. Yeah, seriously. He started at Davis High School, then transferred to Folsom. I believe it was his dad that wanted him to go there for better football, which mm-hmm. is the smartest decision he's ever made because since he went to Folsom, he became a monster.
Like, yeah, so he could be the number one pick depending on who gets that pick. You could see if Arizona, like the Cardinals, get that pick.
The mock draft says the Cardinals take him, which is smart.
I mean, they just got their quarterback, so they're going to have to go elsewhere. Their offensive
line
is pretty bad.
They just are. Their other weapons are. And if they lose their corner in Patrick Peterson because he asked for a trade, that would be a serious hole in that.
Greedy Williams from LSU is that cornerback, too. They could go there.
But do you draft him like third?
I don't know. Just depends.
I'd love for the guy, but like.
What's nice about the Cardinals is that it looks like they got a pretty decent young receiver, Christian Kirk. They have a running back, David Johnson. They have their quarterback. They just need to build their offensive line and probably their defensive line, to be honest. Maybe a cornerback, too, but definitely their secondary, for sure.
Do you see a cornerback being like, you know, like you've seen a lot of players or a lot of different positions drafted like number one or two. You don't really see the corner be drafted that high. In this
yeah,
league.
You usually see a quarterback and pass rushers drafted like at the highest,
mm-hmm. unless you're like generational talent in the secondary.
But let's talk about something before we head to break. Some big news in the NFL. Amari Cooper, Oakland Raiders, speaking of number one draft picks or first round draft picks, he got traded to the Cowboys. A former first round pick gets traded for a 2019 first round pick. What's your initial thoughts on the trade?
Well, this was after our show on yesterday. And so I was like, oh, well, why couldn't this happen like an hour before? That's my first thought. Second thought is, so now the Raiders have three first round draft picks.
Yeah.
And they're like early, like fourth. Like
one will be in the top five. One will be in the top 15.
As of right now, I believe it's like 4, 18, and 21 of something, like something around there.
Sounds about right.
So that's huge. Like, we're all laughing at John Gruden, but he's laughing right now because he's got three first round draft picks in a very deep defensive draft class. Mm-hmm. And he loves his defense. So,
yes.
That's a huge addition.
But you're also giving up on a first-round talented wide receiver.
But.
And before you talk about Amari Cooper's struggles, which are real, tell me if he's the one struggling or his teams, his offenses are the ones struggling. Because I know what you're going to say, and I know what every Amari Cooper...
I'm not an Amari Cooper hater. I'm just going off the...
Do you think that Amari Cooper is a talented football player?
He's absolutely talented.
Hold on. I'm going to ask you some questions. Okay, just answer them. Do you think he's a talented football player?
Yes.
We see him, even though his inconsistency is big, he has huge games every so often. Every other game, every two or three games, he'll have a big game, even last year. Are his struggles him or the fact that his offense, his quarterback, his offensive coordinator has been terrible for the last 2 years?
That's a good...
Because I'm not so sure that it's Amari Cooper that's the problem, is what I'm getting at. Because I know Raider fans are out there saying, well, this guy's underperforming. We got a first-round pick for him. But kind of feels like we're hiding the real problem here, which is... actual quarterback and maybe game plans. Does that make sense?
Yes, but what I'm trying to say is we are going to find out how when Amari Cooper plays for the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, he's going to struggle because that offense struggles. Dak Prescott struggles. His game is not, in my opinion, going to change because he just got to the team. And you know as well as I do that he has to learn a new playbook. It's going to be weeks before he can even play a full, 60-minute game with the amount of plays. He'll get 5, 10 plays, 15, 20 plays, things like that. But and with Dak Prescott not being the most accurate passer in the world, it's going to be similar to what he has in Derek Carr. But you said the Raiders now have three first-round picks, but they also need to replace a generational talent at pass rusher and a very talented wide receiver. So you're just kind of getting a first-round pick hoping that the players you draft are as good as the ones you just gave up.
But
that's the thing.
You are trading to the Cowboys, who are probably not going to make the playoffs.
It could be a top-10 pick. Absolutely could be a top-10 pick. Top 15,
and
likely.
If he's not going to play well regarding your offense, why keep him?
Because what if he's actually really good and you need to change your quarterback in a year?
You think Dak Prescott's going to be changed in a year?
No, I'm saying I was talking...
Oh, you're talking about Derek Carr?
Right.
Oh, but, I see. I thought you were going to talk about the Cowboys.
But regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the Cowboys, I don't know if they won this trade either.
And I'll say this.
Hear me out here. The Cowboys might have a top 10 pick, right?
Yes.
Dak Prescott might struggle the rest of the season, right?
Yes.
Dak Prescott was a fourth round draft pick, correct?
Yes.
The Cowboys have not really invested a lot in Dak Prescott, considering he's a fourth round pick. They didn't trade up for him.
Well, let me
They haven't
you there.
Paid him. Hold on, I'm not done. So if the Cowboys decide in 6 to 8 games from now that Dak Prescott's not their future at quarterback and they end up with a top 10 pick, they now don't have that pick that they could use on a quarterback. Because the jury's still out on Dak Prescott. This is a make-or-break season, in my opinion, And he's still treading water. He's had a good game against Jacksonville. He had a rough game against the Redskins. Like, it just seems like that's his MO.
Can I speak now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dak Prescott wasn't even supposed to be the starting quarterback when he was drafted. Tony Romo was the guy.
Right.
Then Tony Romo got injured, and he took over and took that team to 13-3.
So the point is that the Cowboys didn't say, that's our franchise quarterback, let's go get him. They said, oh, it's the fourth round. They actually wanted Connor Cook, who was the backup quarterback for the Raiders before he got cut. And the Raiders picked Cook right in front of them. They take Dak Prescott. That's my point. If the Cowboys traded for a receiver, but they still don't have a quarterback, and then they go into the draft, because if they have a top 10 pick, that means that Dak Prescott isn't good, right?
Like, let me just say this. Dak Prescott's not like the bottom tier of quarterbacks right now.
He's in the top 20?
I was going to say he's mid-tier.
He's in the top 20?
Out of 32, I'd say he's number 20.
It's close.
There's a lot of bad quarterbacks right now.
No, there's a lot of good quarterbacks. There's a lot of good quarterbacks.
All right, name 19. Okay, it's easy to name the top 10.
I could name. It's easier to name the quarterbacks that are worse than him.
Okay, go.
Well, I'll put all the young ones in there for now. Baker, Rosen, Darnold, Allen. They show me more. Because, well, I mean, you could say it's unfair, but none of them have won as many games as Dak. None of them are on winning teams. So, I mean, the jury is still out. But I'm giving you those. So what is that, five?
Mm-hmm.
Flacco, eh. Dalton, eh. There's not too many that are worse than him. Derek Carr, maybe?
Derek Carr is worse.
But they're kind of in the same boat, aren't they? I mean, young quarterbacks.
They are both number four. Yes, you're getting to that.
They both are number four. They both have been up and down more.
One has cried on the field, though. The other one hasn't.
I think every quarterback in most divisions are better than Dak, honestly.
I would put C.J. Beathard behind him.
He's not a starter, though.
Yeah, he is. Right now, he is.
He's starting. He's not a starting quarterback in the NFL, though. He's not a starter. You can start and not be a starter.
By your definition of a starter, he is a starter.
We need to go to a break. We're way overdue.
Whoa, we've been going for 22 minutes.
All right, let's go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little NBA Lakers Spurs overtime
game.
Very
fun game to watch, by the way.
Yeah, we'll talk about
that
and how the Lakers are looking in their game 3 with LeBron.
Yes, we'll be right back right after this.
Are you looking for the very best NFL and college football podcast? Then check out the GSMC Football Podcast. Get the latest football news, both on and off the field. From the NFL draft to trades to the rumor mill to the NFL combines, they got you covered. That's gsmcpodcast.com/football-podcast. Get updates on college rivalries, game day insights, and much, much more. It's football talk the way you want it. This show eats, sleeps, and breathes football. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We just finished talking about Monday Night Football between the Falcons and the Giants, and also the Amari Cooper trade to the Cowboys for a first-round pick. Now we move on to the NBA, and most notably the NBA, when we talk about them, we're going to talk about LeBron James and the LA
Lakers.
Who's
that? Never heard of him.
Yeah, very funny. Let me do my job. And the LA Lakers face the San Antonio Spurs in a very, very fun to watch overtime thriller as the Spurs came back to beat the LA Lakers 143-142. This is the most points ever by a LeBron led team.
I feel like they hit the over in total points.
But LeBron, this is the first time a LeBron led team got that many points. And granted,
in a game, like, it doesn't matter. He's never played in a game higher than this. Yeah. I mean, it is a lot.
He's never played in a game higher than this.
But that is kind of crazy because he's played in a lot of games. It's a lot of points, but you would think like he'd maybe gotten like a double OT game or something like that.
But LeBron did miss some clutch shots in this game.
But he made that clutch shot to send him an OT.
Yeah, but he did. There was
Don't forget that.
But there was one more three he needed to make with 2 seconds left in overtime, and he missed it.
Well, what do you want him to do? Make them all there, Jeff?
Well, I mean, if for the win, yeah.
He's the king.
Yeah.
So what do you say? The Lakers are 0-3.
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of shocked they're that far down. But let's look at the stats of this game. There's a lot of points.
They actually shot threes at a pretty good rate for the Lakers.
You know, there's two guys who led the game in points. They both had 37 points.
Kuzma
had 37 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and LaMarcus Aldridge, again, with a solid game, 37 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. And DeMar DeRozan had a great game himself, 32 points, 8 rebounds, 14 assists.
Feels, it's funny, because Kuzma got the start because Ingram is suspended. So.
Yeah, so what do you is now Kuzma the starter? But now you
I mean, Kuzma had a really good rookie season, so and, well, he's a nice
guys,
player.
Speaking of replacements, Lonzo Ball did pretty all right. He had 14 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. Maybe more assists were needed for him in the point guard position. But overall, that's a pretty okay game.
I don't want to stray too far from this topic, but have you ever seen the Kenan Thompson LeVar Ball impression on Saturday Night Live? I'll show it to you at the break.
But, no, but we cannot talk about that.
Never lost. If you guys have heard that, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay, can we talk about sports again?
Yes, let's talk about the Lakers.
I don't want to give LeVar Ball any
airtime.
No, he doesn't deserve it.
So let's talk about the Lakers actually had a good three-point shooting night, which they did not have in the first two games, but they still take the L. They lose.
That's a strong statement.
36% is very good.
Yeah, well, but when you look at it, because Kuzma...
Now, the Spurs shot very well from three. That's where they did well. They still outscored
Rudy
the Lakers.
Rudy Gay went 2-3.
He did not.
From three?
Rudy, well, that's impressive. He is definitely not a good three-point shooter.
Forbes went 4-8, and DeRozan went 2-5. But Kuzma went 4-10, so he could have a lot more points if he sucked more than 40% of his threes.
I mean, 40's still a good rate.
I know, but like LeBron only went 2-8. That could have been...
Kuzma can shoot it from the outside.
What surprised me is Lonzo Ball shot 7 times from three.
He made 3. That's not bad.
Still, like with like how he's been shooting, I'm surprised he got that many opportunities to shoot or took the chances to shoot that many times.
I mean, he only took 9 shots, but 7 or 3. So, I mean,
Hart off the bench went 4-7 from three for the Lakers.
Yeah. So, I mean, what do we make of the Lakers? It's been 3 games. I know they still need to play more games. They are missing guys due to suspension.
0-3 really
speaks for... Are you still confident in your top 4, top 5 playoff prediction?
I'm honestly kind of doubting it at the moment because LeBron has led no talent teams before to great heights, but I've never seen him start 0-3. He might have in the past, but I've never seen him start this sloppy at 0-3 before.
Yeah, and the Lakers, they have a really good chance to win their next game as they play Phoenix tomorrow night. So they probably should win that game. I mean, it is in Phoenix, but it's the Lakers against a very young Phoenix team led by DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker. But if the Lakers don't win that game, Jeff, they play the Nuggets, and then they play the Spurs again.
I want chicken nuggets right now.
The Nuggets just beat the Warriors. Nuggets are a strong team. There's a chance if they don't beat the Suns, they could go 0-6.
So are you predicting 0-82?
No, but I mean, like, you don't want to get in a big hole even this early in the year, right? Like,
Oh yeah, absolutely not. Especially in the
Western
West.
Conference. The West is it's like a Kentucky Derby race. It's like
if you're slow off the gate, you're not going
exactly.
Very far.
Like your kick at on the last turn might not be enough because you're trying to catch teams like the Warriors, the Rockets, the Jazz. Those teams can go on 20 game winning streaks.
The Lakers are playing the Spurs again on Saturday.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
I know you just mentioned that, but I just think it's like a funny thing to.
It is funny.
Talk about like this game just happened and like when they meet back up. The Lakers might not have a win still.
Exactly. They need to beat the Suns because that's a gimme win. But the Nuggets are 3-0 and have looked as impressive as anybody so far. I mean, they beat the Warriors and they're 3-0.
There's a lot of undefeated teams, actually, when all things considered.
Yeah. I mean, three games, you're always going to get funny
stats.
Toronto is
4-0 at the moment. The Bucks are 3-0. Mm-hmm. The Pistons are 2-0. Like you said, the Nuggets are 3-0. And not on that list, surprisingly, is the Warriors at 3-1 after that game against Denver.
Yep. And the Lakers are now behind the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Clippers and the Golden State Warriors.
My Lord. Being behind the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns.
I know it's only three games, but you never want to be behind those teams.
And especially, like, not the Kings or the Clippers right now, because those teams are...
This ain't your daddy's Sacramento Kings, by the way, with Peja and Vlade and all them, so...
Yeah, this team sucks.
Yeah, so...
All due respect for Kings fans, but...
Hey, they beat the Thunder. That was a good win.
Yeah, but they're just... I feel bad for all Kings fans. I mean, it's hard to be a fan of a team that has a front office like that.
So the Lakers, they play the Suns, the Nuggets, and the Spurs this week.
The Suns just lost to the Warriors by 20 points, though, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. And the Nuggets just beat the Warriors.
There was more than one game that ended in a one-point overtime victory because the Wizards and Trailblazers... Washington won 125-124 in final overtime.
Yeah, we
and it ended off of a Damian Lillard was going for a 2-point layup and got blocked by Otto Porter Jr.
Mm.
But there was
Otto Porter
Jr.
who looks oddly identical to Wilt Chamberlain. Look it up in the break.
Wait.
Look it up, people.
Let me see this.
Otto Porter Jr. Wilt Chamberlain. And considering Porter, Wilt Chamberlain...
I gotta look this up now,
considering
too.
That Wilt Chamberlain had many female friends during his time in the NBA, it's possible.
Wow, let's just go there, shall we?
It's possible.
You think his dad is actually Wilt Chamberlain.
So we're gonna go to a quick break while Jeff looks this up. When we come back, we're gonna talk about...
not as much a resemblance as you think.
We're gonna talk about the World Series preview for Game 1... We talked a little bit about the series yesterday, but we will look at Game 1, the probables for tonight, who has the edge, and what we think will happen. So we'll do that right after this.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We just finished talking about the NBA a little bit. Most notably, the LA Lakers going 0-3 after an overtime loss to the Spurs. And now we're going to talk about the MLB and the World Series Game 1. We've talked about the overview. We both think the Red Sox are taking the series, but we got to look at Game 1 in more detail as we now have a pitching matchup, as Chris Sale has been named the starter for quite some time, but now the Dodgers have named Clayton Kershaw as the starting, I almost said running back for some reason, starting pitcher for the LA Dodgers in game one. This is very interesting.
You know what else is very interesting?
What?
Dave Roberts.
What about
managing
him?
Against the Red Sox?
Again.
Well, I'm talking about because he stole that base for the Red Sox, probably their biggest stolen base in postseason history for the organization. Now he comes back and he's a manager on the other
Wasn't
side.
Wasn't that against the Yankees in the ALCS all those years ago?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So he's
What's
back.
Up with players being in like playoff groups, like first Craig Counsell, now this, and
yeah.
Well, so. Craig Counsell also has a World Series ring to multiple, actually, to his credit.
He was on that Diamondbacks team,
and he was on that Florida Marlins team.
It's true.
So in theory, it's actually smart to bring these guys in as managers because they have the experience of winning.
Yeah, and Craig Counsell and Dave Roberts, I mean, you look at their careers and you can see why they'd be good managers, because a lot of times in sports, it's hard to be a manager after you've been a great player, like a Hall of Fame caliber player, but it's a lot easier if you were like a role player, somebody who did the right things to be in the league, whatever sport that may be. So like a guy like Steve Kerr, role player, but knows what winning looks like. Craig Counsell, role player, utility player, all around good player, knows what winning looks like. Dave Roberts, the same thing. So you can see a lot of times how these guys end up being very good managers because maybe they weren't blessed with as much talent on the field as some of their counterparts, but they figured out how to be extremely effective and know how to win, play winning baseball or basketball, whatever sport it is, in addition to just knowing what excellence looks like. So, game one. Chris Sale. Clayton Kershaw. Who has the edge tonight?
I got to go with Sale, man.
Mm-hmm.
Sale is just... I feel like Clayton Kershaw's been playing great, no question about it. But Sale, what he has behind him is a better team.
Mm-hmm. So, lineup-wise, Red Sox... I'm assuming we both think that.
Yeah.
But
plus, Clayton Kershaw, like, remember in the World Series last year, he kind of laid an egg.
I mean, he has laid eggs in the playoffs, but he had a really good last game. So do you think that he's riding that confidence and will have another strong outing, or do you think he will have a terrible outing tonight or somewhere in between?
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know because I don't know. It's hard to see. This is where it gets hard because when you like David Price is a perfect example of this because we were like, oh, he hasn't won a game. He usually like what I just said, lays an egg, and then he pitches a perfect performance, basically in the last game against the Astros to get them into the World Series. Now Clayton Kershaw, is he gonna help the team win or is he gonna be the reason they're like behind? Like, it honestly could go either way.
Yeah, and it's
I know that's so cliche, like, oh, you don't know, but, like,
I
that's
mean,
Clayton Kershaw.
You really didn't make a point. Like, you got to decide what will happen tonight. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I don't know because...
Let the people know.
Shut up. Clayton Kershaw has been, like, so inconsistent. It's because you can't judge. You can't tell. But I have to go with Chris Sale on this one, and I think Clayton Kershaw... against that dominant Red Sox batting is not going to do well. Mm-hmm. There's my answer.
So you got the Red Sox tonight.
I got to go with the obvious choice in this one. And J.D. Martinez at the top of his game. Jackie Bradley Jr. has been playing very well. He was MVP of the ALCS. Mookie Betts speaks for himself. Potential, probably the MVP of the entire American League. And when you have even just with these three guys, that's a problem. But everyone on the team can hit. Everyone can contribute.
Mm-hmm.
That's Absolutely. Why they have 108 wins. So,
do you think it's a low scoring or high scoring game?
So if Kershaw gives up a couple of hits in the first inning, I'm going to say it's going to be high scoring. But if that doesn't happen, if he gets to the first inning fine, I'm going to say it's a low scoring matchup. Mm-hmm. It all depends on that first inning for me.
Yeah. I see the Dodgers bullpen having a struggling in this series, but
to say they're having a stroke.
To be fair, the Red Sox bullpen has struggled too. That's the one knock you can say about the Red Sox in this postseason. Their starting pitching has been good. Their hitting has been great, but again, we've seen Kimbrel, we've seen some other players in the bullpen not live up to expectations. The Dodgers, I think, are a little shaky in the bullpen as well. I like the Red Sox tonight because I think they'll be able to score a few runs off of Kershaw, but also I think they'll score a couple late. So I think the Red Sox will win by a score of around like 5-3 or so, 6-3.
I'm going to ask you this question.
Go ahead.
Do you put in consideration their regular season and how they did?
Because no, it doesn't matter. It matters for confidence, and it matters for how they feel about themselves, but it doesn't. It's all about like the last couple weeks for me, like in baseball, like in other sports. It's about how your team is playing like right now, like in the last, your form, right? Like you can be a great team but not be in the best run of form. When I know a lot of people who like soccer, for example, we talk about form all the time, right? Like it's, you can be the best team. You can be the Golden State Warriors but then have a bad 4 or 5 game run, so you're not playing at your best. I think the Red Sox are at the top of their game. It doesn't matter that they won 108 games, but they carried that momentum from the regular season into the postseason. We saw them dismantle the Yankees, dismantle the Houston Astros. These are great teams that they're beating. Not even much of a fight. Now, the Dodgers in their own right are playing well. They got past the Brewers. It took them 7 games, but it was a gritty win, a gritty series. But, man, it's hard to see the Red Sox being the lesser team here. It's hard to see them being intimidated here. It just feels like them being at home, them having a chance to really take a lead in this World Series, it seems like the Red Sox series to win, you know?
Yeah, it definitely does. But like when you're looking at it, the Red Sox had 108 wins and are still carrying that momentum. Usually that's kind of like bad luck almost when you start. It's like when they had most wins in the league because there's something that happens in the postseason where they just get upset, and now they're facing a team that's with only 92 wins. They have over 10 wins, almost nearly 20 wins more than the Dodgers do. And honestly, that it's
anything can happen. 7 games, all that doesn't mean anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like the team with the most wins in a season, regular season, is 111 wins, and they didn't even make it to the World Series. That was the 2001 Seattle Mariners.
I mean, all that really does is, you know, to be quite honest with you, is give you a home field advantage in the playoffs, but you still got to go out there and win the games and beat the best. And the Dodgers are the best team in the National League. Did they have a down year? Some would say yes, but some would still say that they were the best team in the National League, and they proved it. And maybe the Dodgers are getting better as the postseason goes on, you know? They did win the last 3 out of 4 against the Brewers, so.
True. So, but what I'm trying to say is the fact these two teams have not a history together, but a history of excellence. And one has had a recent string of excellence. The other one has had not so much. Like, the Dodgers haven't won since 1988. Mm-hmm. And the last time the Red Sox won, 2013. So do you take that into consideration? One is on a drought, the other one's not?
No. It's different players, man. It's I mean, how many people from that Red Sox team are still on the team? It seems like they've changed almost everybody.
There's got to be at least a couple, right?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
I can't think either. Because I was like, oh.
It seems like every Red Sox player that they have, at least like important player, has been new in the last 4 or 5 years. Like Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Chris Sale, David Price. Like,
I just realized everyone we named is a new Red Sox player, all things none considered.
Of them. Yeah, none of them. Porcello, Shaw, Bogarts.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if one of them was maybe on the bench. You know, maybe like a...
I'm going to say at least one might be on the bench.
Like
from that
maybe one was a pinch runner, you know? Like, they sure. just weren't...
They still get a ring. I don't think they're complaining.
Sure, but this Red Sox team hasn't won a ring, you know? That's I guess, different manager, too. So, mm-hmm. Everything's different.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is going to be a very good series.
Which is kind of crazy, and it makes you actually appreciate what they've done in the last 5 years, right?
Yeah.
To literally change your entire team. Like, you're How many people on their 40-man roster from that 2013 season? I bet you not many.
Oh, yeah, definitely
maybe
not many.
Less than 10, probably 5 or 6. Crazy.
But I will say this. This series is either going to be really, really good or completely one-sided. It's not going to be like, win here, couple wins there. One team's going to dominate the other, or it's going to be back and forth throughout the entire series.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you think this series will go, did you say 5 or 6?
I said 5.
5.
But I can see it going to 7, and I can even see a sweep.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there will be a sweep. I think the Dodgers will get at least one game. I mean, it's hard to tell. I think we'll learn more tonight. If the Red Sox come out and they smash the Dodgers, it could be an ugly series. But, you know, like in most series, it's all about the first two games. The road team needs a split. If you don't get a split, things can get real shaky after that because it makes that game 3 a must win. But I still think the Red Sox will win this series. I say 6 games. Maybe it won't be so easy, but I do expect them to be holding the trophy at the end of all this. But I think we need to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about other interesting news and notes around the world of sports. So stay with us. We will be right back.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We just finished talking about the MLB World Series matchup that has Chris Sale versus Clayton Kershaw going head-to-head in Game 1. But now let's move on to other matters at hand. We're going back to the NFL. And Patrick Peterson, the longtime cornerback and leader of the defense for the Arizona Cardinals, is asking to be traded.
Yeah, that's interesting. He obviously is looking probably to go to a team that has a better outlook than his current team, which is obviously rebuilding.
And that could be any 31 other teams in the league, to be honest.
Yeah, so let's play a game. Where do you think it would be a good landing spot for Patrick Peterson based on team and need?
Supposedly, his cousin posted, said, well, yeah, thanks for interrupting me. Yes, he said he wants to be on the Saints, which makes sense because they are a championship contender.
That does make sense. I think that would be a good spot for him. I don't know what the compensation is going to look like. He's a good player. He's a really good player. I don't know if he's a top 5 corner in the NFL, but he's definitely a guy who can make an impact on a lot of different football teams, especially some of these teams that are looking to go into the postseason. What about a team like Philadelphia? They've had secondary issues.
Yes, but I think the main question we should ask ourselves is, if you're the Cardinals, who are you? What are you asking for?
You're probably not getting better than a second round pick if you can get a second. If you are wanting to trade him based on just letting him get his way and move on, I'd say aim for a second round pick. As we approach the deadline, maybe a team will get desperate. We saw yesterday, we didn't think that Amari Cooper would go for a first-round pick, but all it takes is one team. to do it. So it's,
I could totally see a team trading a first round pick for him, even though he's at the end of his career.
Not a first round pick. No one.
I'm saying there could be a dumb team. But
Amari Cooper makes sense because he's 24 years old and he was a first round pick. Like, he's a talented kid, but Peterson's a little bit older. I'd say a second round, but if they have to, I think a third round pick would be all right for him. It's the NFL. You just don't see trades like we saw yesterday very often. We don't see first round picks getting traded for wide receivers very often.
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing is, for me, is I don't know. But some people are going to be just so desperate to win now that they might trade anything they can to get a guy like Patrick Peterson, who's still playing at a high level.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw, I mean, teams weren't willing to give Seattle a second-round pick for Earl Thomas, and I think Earl Thomas is a better player than Patrick Peterson. So,
I think it was more of like he was at the end of his contract, and that's a contract situation rather than the same with Le'Veon Bell. Like, if you trade him, are you just trading him for the season, and you're going to pay him, or like, what's the deal there? Like, that's, I think, what was going through the Earl Thomas trade. I don't think this is a situation for the Patrick Peterson trade. I'm not sure on his contract, but
yes. So let's see other teams. So we named
the Saints.
The Saints. I think the Eagles
are a possibility.
Well, who else would you say? Heck, why don't the Rams just go trade for him? They try and trade for everybody else who comes available.
I mean, they could probably get something good out of it.
They could use him too. It's kind of scary.
Without Aqib Talib, yeah. But they still
even six. With Aqib Talib, Peters and Peterson would be interesting.
Yeah, they're still undefeated. So,
what about the Chiefs?
They need it more than anyone, it feels like.
Yeah, I wonder how he would feel going from the nice, warm confines of what's the stadium called now in Arizona, and then go to Kansas City where he's playing outdoor and rain and snow, cold. Would be interesting. So did you see that the Raiders put Marshawn Lynch on IR?
Yes, he's done. He's probably done for the season.
Probably done, right? I mean,
you think done?
I mean, this is the last year of his contract. He's older.
The team is not going nowhere. They're not going to win.
If the team is rebuilding, what's the point?
They're rebuilding for Vegas. We both agree on that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if they're rebuilding and they got rid of Amari Cooper, what's the point in bringing back Marshawn Lynch if you're trying to get a young player at, you know, all across the board? So
yeah, it's definitely an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. I thought his tenure
is he a Hall of Famer after this kind of rough Raiders tenure?
I don't think this matters, but it's close
because his Raiders career has not been the best. You know, obviously he was retired.
Overall,
his
career hasn't been like he's had five or six really good years. I would say he's probably a Hall of Famer, but man, it is close. And you got maybe like guys like him and Frank Gore probably going at the same time or be up for it at the same time. That's an interesting debate.
Yeah, but right now, but you're talking about Frank Gore. He's had a couple hundred yard games already, and Marshawn Lynch is riddling with injuries. And
but I'm just talking about their careers. This season doesn't matter. It's when we look at if these players are making the Hall of Fame, Gore versus Lynch has been a topic that some people talk about because Marshawn Lynch's peak was better than Frank Gore's peak, but Gore had a longer longevity. He did it for a longer time. He was always a top five, top 10 running back throughout most of his career, except for maybe 2 to 3 seasons. Whereas Lynch, he wasn't a top 10 running back for most of his career, but about half of it. And then during that half, he was really good, to probably top five, especially when he went to Seattle from 2009 to 2013, 2014 or so. That was a really good run for Marshawn Lynch. If only they would have given him the ball.
The Seahawks run was like that saved his career. If he stayed in Buffalo, he would have been done.
Yeah, that was a great move for him to leave. So did you see the Angels new manager in baseball transitioning back over, Brad Ausmus, who is the former manager of the Detroit Tigers? He says he's now taking a new school approach to the way he manages. That he spent this last year researching a lot of analytics and looking at things from an old school traditional perspective, and looking at them in a new age analytic perspective, and it sounds like he is embracing the technology, embracing the data. I'm not sure what that is going to mean for on-field performance or strategy at this time, but I think it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool to see a manager who has experience in Major League Baseball take a step back and be able to have that, you know, put your ego aside and always be willing to learn and try new things.
Well, for a guy that looks like he's 70, probably is 70.
He's not that old.
He looks that old.
Okay.
He's got a lot of white hairs. Let's get real there.
So do I, so.
No, you don't. I'm looking at you right now. Is that what you buzzed the side of your head? Was there white hair there?
No, it's not why. I've always kind of kept my hair short, but anyways.
Anyways, going off topic.
Enough about me.
Same stuff with the... I don't know why that was so funny to me, but it was. But bottom line is, when you're a guy who's been to the World Series before and saying, like, I'm going to try stuff new, that usually isn't stuff that will work. Sometimes you got to keep with that old school stuff, no?
No. You look at even this year's baseball playoffs, you see the bullpens being used more regularly. You see pitchers start games and then they go right to the pen. I don't know. I just think that,
like, what can
the game
do?
Is
what
different
can you
now.
Do new? Yeah, I guess
the
I
game know. Is different yeah. now. Well, you see guys like, for example, Jeff,
like doing
Josh
five
Hader.
Pitches. Oh,
Josh
okay.
Hader. What's the pitcher's name for the Indians? The relief pitcher.
Indians relief pitcher.
Yeah.
Well, there's like seven of them.
The really good lefty who had a bad year this year.
Anyways. I know who you're talking about. I cannot say his name to save my life right now. Yeah. I'll look him up, though.
Yeah. Anyways, my point is that you see a lot of these new managers, a lot of these teams in the last few years embrace the idea of adjusting how you use your bullpen. You see guys like Josh Hader who come in for a couple innings, and they're not a closer. They're not a starter, but they're pitching in the middle innings, maybe two or three innings in high leverage situations. That didn't used to be the case. It used to be that your best relief pitcher was your closer, right?
Yeah. I think it was Cody Allen.
He's very good.
No, he's a righty. He's a righty.
Cody Allen's very good, but that's not who I was talking about. But that they're a team that really... You can see this in a few different teams in baseball.
I'll look at the depth chart. Like I was seeing, as soon as I was saying, I'm like, wait a minute, he's a right-handed pitcher. Back out, abort, abort.
You can. It's Andrew Miller. That's who it is.
Yes, it is Andrew Miller. He's the second. Yeah,
it
yeah.
just popped into my head. It's been a tough morning for me, but
we have to get up at 5 a.m. So bear with us.
Yeah,
on
so
this.
Other so do other people, but I didn't sleep very well.
I had to drive like an almost like 45 minutes to get here.
Anyways, though, you see it with other players like or other teams. You see these guys using pitchers differently because the analytics say, hey, you actually don't need your best pitcher to pitch the ninth. You need him to pitch the seventh when there's two on and one out, like the high leverage situations. You need a pitcher to pitch three innings to start a game and then turn it over to your bullpen. So we're seeing teams with a different approach just in pitching. We see it in hitting, Jeff. Look at how many times players strike out nowadays, but also hit home runs. You know, that's because the analytics say, don't bunt here, swing here, swing for the fences here. If you strike out, so what? It's one out. Keep playing this way because the numbers and the data say so. Speaking of numbers and data, this is a perfect segue to end the show. Can I go on a little bit of a rant here?
About what? Let me know. What about what?
About Pat Shurmur and the New York Giants being criticized for going for two down 14 points.
I'm going to let you go. Go
for
it. All
right. When you're down...
And that's all the time we have for today.
When you are down by 14 points in the fourth quarter, you should always go for two on your first touchdown. I know that sounds foreign and that sounds crazy to people, but the numbers and the data support that. You go for two. And without getting into the numbers and all that mumbo jumbo that you can go look up, just Google this. I promise it's there. By multiple studies, multiple websites, analytic forums, they will show you these charts, these graphs. But just the science alone, or without the science alone, you want to try and win the game when you're down by 14 points in regulation. You don't want to come all the way back, score two touchdowns, kick two extra points, then go to overtime, hope that you win the toss, get the ball, score a touchdown. There's a lot of different variables there. If you could win the game in regulation, you do it. You go for two on the first touchdown to close it to 8 points. To close it to six, ideally. But even if you don't succeed, you're only down eight, so you can get a touchdown and a two-point conversion to tie the game. That's your worst-case scenario. Your best-case scenario, you score a touchdown, you get the two, you're down six, you score a touchdown with a couple seconds left in the game, you kick the extra point, you win, you don't go to overtime, the game is over. And you know what? In the off chance that you miss that extra point, which happens from time to time, a la Justin Tucker, you actually go to overtime. So with that being said, I know that sounds a little bit crazy, but I don't like how Pat Shurmur is being criticized by the media. It's tough being a coach in New York in that media market. However, I think he did the right thing, and the numbers support it. That's all I have, Jeff. That's it.
Are you okay now? Did you get all that out of your system?
Woo! Feels so good.
You seem to not like other people's opinions of that.
I don't like people's opinions other than mine.
I'm your co-host.
Exactly. So let's go.
We agree sometimes. So you disagree when I agree with you?
If you would like to hear our opinions on football and basketball, check out those podcasts that will be coming out later today. Full-on show of basketball, full-on show of football. But, of course, we're here every morning. We'll be back tomorrow morning. We will discuss Game 1 of the Major League Baseball World Series tonight. We will discuss it tomorrow. Jeff, you want to add anything?
I think I'm good after that rant.
All right.
Nothing to go on.
But so I am
out. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back tomorrow for the sports podcast. But right now, we're going to do our football and basketball podcast. And we will see you next time.
Peace.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.